As we just heard, one part of the world where wildfires have been raging this week is Sweden, a place that's not known for its hot and dry conditions. Martin Hedberg joins us from Sweden. He's a meteorologist and a writer. So what is the latest on this week's fires in Sweden, Martin, and the weather conditions that have been contributing to them?
Well, today there's about 20,000 hectares of forest which is actively burning right now in Sweden. And yeah, there's still a lot of fires in the woods. But actually, tomorrow there will be some precipitation and some lightning as well that will cause some relief on the fires. It's not going to put the fires out because we need weeks of rain to do that, but it's going to stop the fires from this violent spreading that we've seen for the last couple of days.
Yeah, well, that will hopefully be a little relief. Do you connect these fires in Sweden to any climate phenomena?
Yeah, this was expected.
What is the connection?
Well, the thing is that we've had this blocking high and there's been some very dry conditions for about 2 months. So there's a lot of potential for fires. And once that happens and the conditions are so dry, you get this big fires. And the drought in itself and the very warm weather that we've had for about 2 months, that is directly connected to the climate.
So let me bring Eric Holthaus into the conversation. He's also a meteorologist and is a staff writer at GRIST. Eric, I know you've been monitoring some of the other weather extremes around the world this summer. Japan, Algeria, Oman, Montreal, I mean, all records everywhere. What's going on and how do you connect these heat patterns to wildfires?
Oh, man, it's hard to know where to start. We expect extreme weather like this every summer. We're right now at the end of the hottest month of one of the hottest years in human history. I mean, this is what the weather is like now. And it's not really appropriate to refer to this as a new normal because it's not going to stabilize. We're going to continue to have more extreme heat waves more frequently. And that's been projected for decades now.
I mean, we're seeing people die. In Japan, there were 65 people who died in a single week, 22,000 people hospitalized after its highest temperature in history, 106 degrees. That was this summer. What are some of the impacts of an increase in heat waves around the world? I mean, aside from fatalities.
Yeah, sure. I think that heat waves are among the most important and deadliest public health impact of climate change. So if you have a place like the UK that doesn't have air conditioning, less than 1% of UK households have air conditioning, there's no place to recover. And our bodies need time to recover from temperatures that we're not used to. When that doesn't happen is when people start having health impacts.
Yeah. And those homes that do have air conditioning, of course, those ACs go on and that increases energy use, which goes into kind of a feedback loop, right?
Yeah, yeah. And this is really, you know, we can think of air conditioning as an adaptation tool to climate change, especially in a place like India. There is a huge number of households that don't have electricity at all. So we're needing to think about how can we provide life-saving climate change adaptation technology that a lot of the rest of the world has to a place in and have carbon-free energy at the same time. So we're not contributing to climate change at the same time as we're trying to keep people safe.
Martin Hedberg, in Sweden, there have always been weather extremes, and we can't exactly blame any one weather event or even one hot year on human-induced climate change. But this is what we've been warned about, right? I mean, how big a shock is this to people in Sweden?
Yeah, people are a bit surprised, of course. As you say, we've had heat waves before, but the number of heat waves and the strength of them are so huge. So you actually can say this is due to climate change. We have caused these extreme events to happen. There's no way this would have happened unless we had added so much carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases to the atmosphere.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like a broken record asking this question, but what can we do? So when I say we, I mean we as individuals, but also we nations, governments. What can individuals do?
Yeah, we can cooperate. And we need to realize that this is for real. It's not a hoax. It's not something that scientists just made up to get more funding or anything like that. And what we're doing right now is that we're messing around in the system. It's obvious that climate is changing and we know the cause of it. And the speed of it is not only that it's happening right now, the speed of it, it's between 50 and 100 times faster than natural climate change. We need to cooperate. And I don't think it's
cooperate how? I mean, let's start with individuals. I mean, what does that actually mean to cooperate together?
Well, as an individual, you can figure out how do you depend on, for instance, on fossil fuel. Are you dependent on it or not? And how can you decrease the dependence? Wherever you have an impact going forward in order to try to change to a low carbon energy and more renewable energy and realize that we have to sort of downsize the amount of energy that we use in order to lower the emissions and in order to let other people who are not so wealthy as we are to actually increase their welfare.
Yeah, I mean, like some people have said, it's a whole recalibration of the global economy. Eric Holthaus, what can governments, both national and local, do to deal with this kind of heat? I mean, was the Paris Agreement not strong enough? And now with the U.S. having pulled out of it, what's left to do?
The most important thing that we can do is talk about climate change and talk about how it affects our life. And most importantly, imagine the world that we want to have and then work backwards to figure out what changes we need to make in our everyday lives and our policies in the way our government works now.
I mean, I was just reading this killer stat today, the 109-degree Fahrenheit reading in Kiryat Omana, June 28th, kind of blew meteorologists away because that was not the day's high temperature. That was the low temperature, the hottest low temperature ever recorded on Earth. So in the middle of this kind of heat, talking about climate change, doesn't that feel like it's not enough?
It's a no-brainer for a lot of people, but until we talk about it directly and make that link, it's not going to be on the front of people's minds as these things are happening, and they're not going to imagine what they can do or what policies need to change. And we're not going to be building that political will towards radical change. I really think that making the choice to talk about climate change whenever you have the opportunity to, with anyone who will listen, is a radical change that you can do in your own life that's going to make a huge amount of difference.
So, Eric, I was going to ask you how this hot summer has hit you emotionally, but maybe you can leave us on a positive note. Leave us with a story that, you know, kind of suggests the kind of world we want to be in.
Yeah, so I have two little kids, too. So I'm watching all this happen, and you can see the world through their eyes a lot easier. Youth around the world are recognizing this is their issue. You know, this is their world that they're fighting for, and they're fighting for the right to survive. And you see them voicing that, and that just gives me a lot of hope personally.
Eric Holthaus is a meteorologist and a staff writer at Grist. Martin Hedberg, a Swedish meteorological consultant and speaker on weather and climate. Thank you both very much for being with us today. Stay cool.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marco.